This episode is sponsored by High Spots, your one-stop shop for everything in the world of professional wrestling. DVDs from various independent promotions like PWG and CZW, shoot interviews like The Kevin Steen Show, t-shirts, books, masks, and even wrestling gear and rings. What do you need a ring for? I don't know, maybe you're going to create your own indie promotion that'll take the world by storm. High Spots has you covered. Go to missspots.com/highspots to buy yourself all those masks you've been wanting. I have a Delirious mask from High Spots that I wear around the house when Kevin isn't here. Don't tell him that. But you can do that in your own home. Again, that's missspots.com/highspots, because sometimes missspots and high spots just go hand in hand.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the main event.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast, the pro wrestling podcast from the perspective of two lifelong fans that simply don't have enough wrestling already going on in their lives, so we decide to talk about it on the internet. Through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and Geek Life Radio, my name is Mike, and with me as always is the moshed My Thrasher. Here's Kevin.
And Mike, do you know what us and the Headbangers have in common?
We wear skirts.
Well, that and neither of us should be on SmackDown in 2016.
That's probably true.
Probably true.
Probably. Well, we have quite a packed show here for you. We got Raw. We got SmackDown. We then have to preview and predict our predictions for NXT TakeOver Toronto.
That's the best thing to do with predictions is to predict them.
NXT TakeOver Toronto and Survivor Series, the 30th edition, or was it?
Who cares? Fantasy Warfare.
Fantasy Warfare, yeah. Let's just jump right into things with Raw.
Yeah, so Raw this week opened up with the Authority and pretty much closed with the Authority because this is the new era and that's how things are being done. Big changes. Mick and Steph are out trying to convince us desperately that Survivor Series matters at all. All the participants are up on the stage, and they start to make pointless and counterproductive matches for the rest of the night where guys will face off against each other, with each other, just basically furthering what they did from the week before.
Heels and faces, tagging, cats and dogs living together.
Pure anarchy. So the first match that they end up making is the match that starts right now, and that's Roman Reigns and KO versus Cesaro and Sheamus. Roman booed like normal. I just want to always make sure we get that in there because that's very important. This match had all the typical odd couple trappings, right? Guys not getting along, but we actually had that on both sides because Cesaro and Sheamus still don't get along all the time, and obviously we get KO and Roman not working out so well together. Owens tags himself in for the finish only to take a brogue kick, have Roman put down Sheamus, put down Cesaro, put down, and just pull Owens over on top of Sheamus for the win. Very similar to last week, where the week before, where Owens pinned Jericho after taking a Superman punch unconscious. So similar finish to a similar match from the week before.
Yeah, I don't know what they're trying to get at here. One time was funny. The two times, it's making your world champ, your universal champ, kind of look like a chump.
And Roman is the ultimate. He just took everybody out. He takes out both members of the tag team, puts Owens over the top of him after taking a brogue kick. I agree with you completely. You've got to book your champion at least in non-title matches to look strong. He can cheat to win. He's a heel champion, but they just get in this repetitive motion of making their world champions look like secondary and bit players, especially as someone who like Roman, who is, let's be honest, he might be the U.S. champ, but he's the focal point of the show.
Oh, yeah.
We get Chris, Braun Strowman, and Seth backstage. Chris Jericho is all about unity. He tries to give them scarves. Chris is gold. on this whole segment. Seth was okay. Braun, angry, rips up the scarf. And Chris Jericho's disbelief over the fact that no one liked his scarves was one of the funnier parts of the show. And he just continues to make otherwise, we talk constantly about how they keep scripting Rollins and now Rollins, but particularly Roman Reigns to try to sound like The Rock. It, when only the things they're scripting The Rock could pull off because of his charisma and his history. I think Jericho is one of those guys where no one else could be doing what Jericho's doing right now.
No.
And be getting these things over. Sometimes you have a unique talent that can do things with material that no one else can do. And when you're booking this stuff and scripting this, you have to realize the talent you're working with.
Yeah, I mean, Jericho has had a little bit of a goofball inside of him since practically day one of WCW.
Sure.
And he's been able to go back to that with ease through his career because people are used to it. We're not used to Roman or Seth being these kind of bro-y, ha, gotcha, burn, zing type of guys. No, like Seth, I mean, for the most part, was a smarmy heel. And Roman is supposed to be an ass kicker.
A silent assassin kind of thing.
And these roles just don't fit them. They fit Jericho because he's done it before. We're used to seeing him do that before. And it is a strength to him. It's something he's comfortable with doing. And neither Seth nor Roman, look comfortable in this, and you really should be playing to their strengths. We've said it ad nauseum through this podcast for years. And
well, the big point here is that Jericho did a good job to make this segment work that probably no one else could have made work. And kudos to him for keeping on doing the work he's doing on the microphone for the company and keeping the show interesting for his segments. Bo Dallas, oh my God, I forgot about Bo Dallas. We had Bo on a mini winning streak. We had him in a mini feud with Curtis Axel, which apparently now has gone nowhere. We were excited to see maybe some continuation of that. And I forgot that we haven't seen him in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
It's a shame. It's a shame that hasn't happened. And
this could have been a pre-show match for Survivor Series.
Sure, it could. Absolutely. And apparently Survivor Series is 4 hours long. They could have absolutely used
it. Wait, it is?
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
They could have used an extra match there. But we get Bo Dallas versus Sami Zayn, and all I'm thinking is, man, Bo, I'm sorry. He's starting to show more aggression. He beats Curtis Axel in this match. He's starting to get a little bit of, building a little bit of momentum. The crowd's starting to care about him, and poof, there goes Bo Dallas's push. He's growing a beard, so maybe he's some Wyatt family in the future, which pretty much everyone has pointed out. Bo gets a little bit of offense in, but this match is a short match. He eats a haluva kick. Man, Bo, am I sorry. I it looks like they had a plan, and now it appears that they had a three-week plan and nothing beyond it.
Yeah, we were afraid of this happening, and it happened. Two guys who have just been, Sammy's been squandered for the most part until last week they decided to throw him into a title match 2 weeks out from the pay-per-view.
Right. I just think it's a shame because I think they were starting to get some momentum with that character again, and I do think you go back to square one. Put Sammy out there against Titus O'Neil again. Put Sammy out there against somebody else that he can beat, and then put Bo in a match. Put him back against a jobber. I don't care. Let's start. Just keep building these characters and start driving down a road to somewhere, not an endless loop to nowhere. And that's where I feel like most of these characters are.
You know, I could go on a little rant here, but I'm going to save it for later because our top five will have something to do with this later on.
Okay. We get Brian Kendrick addressing the entire cruiserweight division, I'm sorry. And we get Rich Swann kind of planting the seeds that he should be the person next to challenge for the Cruiserweight Championship. I'm very happy with this. I'm sure you are as well. We've talked about how much we like Rich Swann. The next kind of thrown together tag match that we get, and this would be a theme for the running for this entire show, is The New Day versus Seth Rollins, Chris Jericho, and Braun Strowman. The New Day come out early, selling and shilling their products. That just took too long, and that was just a big commercial in the middle of the show, which I don't care for. Nondescript match, in my opinion. Braun gets a pin after a power slam. Looks like that might be his new finisher. That's the way they kind of played it up a bit.
They made him look insanely strong in
this
match. That's
the only thing. The only thing I took out of this match was that the entire thing was just to build up Braun Strowman as a monster. And putting him over the New Day, I heard a lot of people saying this was terrible. There's no point to have the New Day lose this match. I disagree completely. The New Day are in a position right now where they are way over. And this,
yeah, they're not.
I'm sure someone might stand up and go, wait, but they're the champs. Why would you book them to lose? You just said Kevin Owens shouldn't be losing. I think it's a different situation. The New Day have held their titles for over 400 days. They have beaten all challengers. They have looked strong consistently as champions for a long time. And this match was not of any consequence. It was to get Braun Strowman over and make him look like a big deal going into Survivor Series. So I think this is perfectly acceptable.
The new Day is at the point to where they don't need the belts. We've talked about that, and I think a lot of people can agree they'd still be just as over without having the straps around. Yeah, they'd be missing like one line out of their whole thing with the WWE. Yeah, but them, Enzo and Cass, John Cena, like, they can lose and they don't really go down any.
Yeah.
Now, if they start losing too much, that's a different thing. But yeah, a loss here and there in something like this, that doesn't hurt their stock.
This does something for Strowman. It does nothing to hurt the New Day. And I think that's the important part about this. Mick and Stephanie McMahon are back in the office, and this was just baffling to me. They were discussing how well their booking has worked so far. Let me do a little check here. Cesaro and Sheamus still not getting along. Owens and Roman Reigns certainly didn't get along throughout that whole match. And we did not see cohesion with Seth, Chris, and Braun Strowman through that whole match. So what exact show are they watching where their master plan is working so well?
They're watching Gotham, most likely. It's on Monday nights, too.
Good. Good point. Charlotte and Sasha have a pretty, I thought, shitty segment in the back in the locker room, mostly because these women were at each other's throats.
Well, you forgot that Paul Heyman came in during
that.
Yeah,
but I don't think he did anything or said anything of note.
I just thought that it was kind of weird that Steph, like, called him fat.
Well,
it just
be a star.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just didn't think that he added much. He kind of was kind of stirring the pot a little bit, but it didn't really play out to anything further in the show. Now the Sasha and the Charlotte locker room segment, actually kind of similar. It didn't really do anything to progress the storyline, in my opinion. We already know these two don't like each other, but these two tried to kill each other in Hell in the Cell. These two have a blood feud, and they're bickering like school children in the locker room. And I just feel like you took a red hot, white hot even feud, blew it off, so to speak, at least for now. And now they're back bickering with each other and because they're teammates. There's just too much of this going on. This is a big problem with this pay-per-view. It's a big problem with this brand split, is that we got to get some of these people away from each other for a while. And this is just prolonging this in this very childish way.
Yeah, this didn't do much for me. Yeah, you hit all the nails there.
Okay. Brian Kendrick and Zin Cara are having a match. Kendrick jumps Zin Cara immediately, which I love. I love Kendrick's character right now. I believe you're on the same page with me as that. Kendrick wins a competitive match with the Captain's Hook. Crowd didn't care a fig. Unfortunately, they don't seem to care very much about the cruiserweight division, even its champion. But I think it's a shame because I think Kendrick's doing some of the best work in the company right now.
He's the most captivating character right now because it's so simple. He's so old school with everything that he's doing, and it doesn't take much to buy in and believe what he's doing and what he's saying. And with that, I'm all in on him. And his mannerisms match the promos, matches the in-ring work, matches his look. I'm interested to see where they're going to go with this on Sunday. If they're going to do a reset with the cruiserweights on SmackDown, considering that they're also going to have their show on the network immediately following SmackDown. We'll see. But I kind of hope that we have Kendrick hold on to the title. Like, it, honestly, to me, it makes more sense to have the title still stay on Raw, the division still stay on Raw, and then you have this additional show on Tuesdays that you can tape before SmackDown Live, and they get some extra time on the road for some of these guys.
Yeah, who knows how that's going to play out, and we'll kind of cover that a little bit in our predictions later on. Do you have anything to say about Anderson and Gallows and Enzo and Cass in the backstage?
I forgot that there was a backstage thing
okay,
with them.
That's kind of where I was at with that. This is now the big, we assume is going to be the main event of the show of the Survivor Series is Brock and Goldberg. Lots of Goldberg chants. We've got a bunch of security in the ring trying to keep these guys apart. Paul is golden on the mic, selling exasperation at Goldberg, continuously cutting him off at the crowd chanting Goldberg. And it turns out Goldberg's in great shape. Really, really good shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an important
part.
So's
the shirt, because it gave him some troubles.
It did. But it's part of the presentation. When you've got a monster like Goldberg that was pushed that way for so long, if he would have come in out of shape and kind of if he would have come in, unfortunately, looking like Sting. Now, Sting, when he first came back, he's a damn near 50-year-old man. Or is he 50 years old?
He's
over 50 years old. That's understandable. We all understand why Sting did not look like he did in 1987. But it does help hurt the presentation, because this is a visual medium. So Goldberg being in good shape is a good thing for this program. What I can basically say about this segment is a lot of people really, really liked it. What did you think about this?
It wasn't bad. I liked the fact that we did get a crowd that realistically was more behind Goldberg than Brock. And that's the narrative that they've been throwing at us. So we finally got to see what that looks like in front of a pro Goldberg crowd. Goldberg's like cutting off of Heyman was a little childish to me. It was just like, each time Paul would try to talk, he'd be like, "Hey, what? Hey, what?" Like, it always happened to you in grade school. But I think that it worked as well, because you saw the heels getting frustrated. But then it got weird, because Goldberg just started beating up security guards. Why?
Because he was trying to get to Brock, and Brock backed down. I like the fact that they didn't tangle before this. I like that they didn't get their hands on each other, because it makes it special when they get their hands on each other. The best thing I can say about this segment, and I thought it was entertaining in certain parts, I just have not bought into this feud, because I don't care who wins. I don't think it matters.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just looking at it in that logical perspective. Maybe I'm not buying into it and really, you know, suspending my disbelief. But I do respect them. They've gotten the crowd to do what they wanted them to do. And they've done it through video packages. They've done it through having a returning star. I didn't think they were going to be able to do it. I thought we were going to have a 50-50 crowd reaction. Turns out they got the crowd to get behind Goldberg and boo Brock. And they did it through, I think they did it well. I don't think they did anything funny to make that happen. So good for them.
Yeah. Like you said, I'm not really a fan of this feud and this match being put together, but whatever. I mean, we're watching it, so.
Great. Women's tag match, once again, another tag match. We have a bunch of women fighting another bunch of women that are all going to fight each other on Survivor Series, or going to fight on the same team at Survivor Series, which, once again, not great for morale, in my opinion. Bayley's on commentary. Sasha submits Alicia Fox after Sasha and Charlotte have a go back and forth. They actually started attacking each other in the middle of the ring, once again showing that this idea of teaming them together was probably not the best idea. This match didn't really mean a lot to me.
No. Again, why are you putting your team against one another so close to
a match?
Get
it out of their system, Mike. You got to get it out of your system.
You can get it out of your system, like playing cards. I don't know.
You play some pretty violent cards, Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
The next match we have is what I dubbed a tag match number 47. That is Anderson and Gallows pin the Shining Stars. This is another match where you've got partners fighting partners.
Why was Golden Truth in this?
Because they sold their spot in Survivor Series for timeshares. That's why.
And they were teaming with the people who they sold the spots to.
Sure, of course. It all makes a lot of sense. Anyway, Anderson Gallows go over, and that doesn't matter much. And then we go on to the main event. The main event of the show starts the same way the show started. Once again, featuring Mick and Stephanie. Great job, guys. Way to get creative. Most of what they're saying directly contradicts the logic of the whole segment and the whole idea of what they're doing, because they bring out Daniel Bryan, they bring out Shane McMahon, and they're sniping at each other, and half of what they're saying is true, and most of what they're saying is talking about how important it is to win these matches and how much competition they're in, when we know that they're not in any competition whatsoever. This is just a mess. This is a desperate attempt to make any of this make any kind of sense, and I'm not buying it. None of this makes any sense whatsoever, and I can't get that. I can't get over that fact. We get a face-off between the Raw and the SmackDown team. It's mostly disjointed, with them all trying to, you know, we have a little bit of Bray back and forth with Strowman, and we have some back and forth with Owens and AJ, which is probably one of the better parts of that segment, because it's champion versus champion there. Until Dean finally just punches Jericho in the face.
Yeah.
And we get a big brawl. And the SmackDown guys are much more over than the Raw guys on the Raw show, probably because those guys weren't advertised to be there, so the fans were excited to see them.
Huge AJ Styles chant during the promo.
Sure.
Section. A gigantic pop for when Bray teased the Sister Abigail on Roman. I don't know if that was mostly because it was on Roman or if they really liked Bray that much.
I think it was a lot against Roman, because we had a spot where Rollins and Roman were teaming up, and when Roman did something, they booed, and when Rollins did something, they cheered.
Yeah.
I think that's the landscape that we have right now for that character. But it was weird. We're pushing this as Raw versus SmackDown, and you're a SmackDown fan or a Raw fan, when the Raw fans there cared more about the SmackDown guys.
Yeah.
Once again, I can't buy into this. This to me, for the go home side of the Raw brand, was lackluster, wheel spinning. Other than Goldberg and Lesnar, nothing really got progressed whatsoever, and we've just kind of been stuck in neutral for a couple weeks.
I would go further than a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And this is paint by numbers for Raw for the most part, since the second episode of the brand extension.
There you go, yeah. So let's just do SmackDown now.
All right, moving on to SmackDown. SmackDown episode 900 starts with Shane and Daniel Bryan coming out, because, of course, who then hype up Edge and The Undertaker being there, and then they say, and we're going to kick the show off with the IC title match. Actually, they kicked the show off with themselves, but I digress. So we have the Intercontinental title match set to start things off. Miz, Dolph, they always have good chemistry in the ring together. Two commercial breaks very quickly in this match, but some good chain wrestling, especially towards the end with some, maybe not chain wrestling, but good reversals.
Great transition spots, moving from one spot to another, crisp, flawless. We see and we call out often when somebody misses something and they don't get close enough to the ropes to get their foot on the ropes. This was just kind of 101. Everyone seemed to be in the right place every time they needed to be in the right place down to the finish of the match. And we don't call that kind of stuff out enough, because it looks well, and we're buying into the match itself. But bravo for those guys for doing something really different. I mean, they've had a lot of matches, and this one seemed like it was a different kind of match in some ways.
It looked like a Miz-Dolph match, because we come to expect a higher level of excellence in their performance. So we know that we have that. But yeah, there were little different spots there. Miz hit an awesome running knee, like the Daniel Bryan running knee on Dolph that I thought took his freaking head off. And there was a really, really close near fall from the skull crushing finale, a really close near fall on the Famouser, which never happens.
Right.
And then we got a shocking finish after the Spirit Squad interfered and weren't able to put Dolph away. We got Dolph going for a small package near the ropes, and Maurice pushes the momentum back to the favor of Miz. Miz gets the three count. He's a six-time Intercontinental Champion now and will face Sami Zayn at Survivor Series.
I was not expecting this. I thought after they put the title on Dolph, they were going to keep it on him and maybe give it to Sami, a babyface. When you have no build-up for a feud, babyface versus babyface makes more sense. It's like when they debuted Nakamura in NXT and there's no real build-up, there's no animosity. You throw him in there with Sami Zayn because you know those guys are going to have a great match together. And we've seen this before in different kind of booking situations. It makes a lot of sense. So I would have guaranteed you that Dolph was going over here. So it was a surprise victory. It was a well-booked victory, in my opinion. I love that Miz had to cheat to win. I love the way he cheated to win. I love the fact that he looked good even in having to cheat. I thought this was a great match. The thing that bothers me the most is that this should have gone on last. This was the most important match on the card, for sure. It was definitely more important than a talk show segment to end the show. I don't care if you're trying to promote Survivor Series more because you have an Intercontinental Championship match that actually means something because a title could switch over to Raw. That's the most important match and the most important stipulation on the whole card. And that was what they opened with. And I just think it's a shame they're doing that with the IC belt because the storyline around the IC belt means more than almost any other storyline going in the promotion, Raw or SmackDown. And I also just have to point out, how amazing is it and how cool is it that you just said earlier on, you know that Miz and Dolph are going to put on a great match? Because years ago, who would have thought you would have said about Miz, you know he's going to put on a great match. Just the dedication to get better and to hone your craft and to really become a student of the game and a professional. And I'm just so happy that Miz has done that. And I hope to see more guys kind of step out and continue to improve and not just rest on their laurels.
Mm. Yeah. Student of the game is a perfect, phrase to use to highlight Miz. I'm looking forward to seeing what he has to do. I'm disappointed that now we have to wonder what is next for Dolph Ziggler at this point.
I want to see that heel turn. I think the heel turn is the big, I think it's a card that they have in their back pocket with Dolph that could really reinvent his character and make him into something special again.
Yeah. Alexa Bliss is talking to Daniel Bryan, showing that her foot was on the rope when the match ended last week. Bryan says now is not the time to talk about this. Natty comes in, says Chumbawamba lyrics. That's about it.
Yeah, I did like Alexa Bliss in this segment. I think she's a little over the top with her mannerism. She's a little over top with the facial expressions, but this is professional wrestling. That's what you do, and I think she does it well.
Yeah, I think it goes along with her character. Yeah. She is a little bit of an overreacting snob of sorts.
She's good.
She
is good. She's got a lot of potential. I think she's going to go a long way in the women's division.
Then we had a singles match with Kalisto taking on NXT's Oni Larko, or Larkin, Lorkin?
Lorkin.
Lorkin. Oni Lorkin. Former Biff Busick, which I like that name way more.
Mainly because you can pronounce it.
Yes. This was a match that gave Lorkin a good amount of offense. He came out straight from the bell with a running dropkick right to Kalisto.
Well, I love that. I love the aggressiveness, but this match was only like 3 minutes. This was not a long match.
It was a minute and 15 seconds.
Oh, okay. Well, then about half of what I just said.
So, like, considering that, Lorkin probably had half, if not a little bit more, of the offense.
Especially since Kalisto kind of missed that springboard off the ropes.
Yeah.
And he had to improvise and continue with the beatdown. I'm guessing that springboard was going to go right into Salida del Sol. So they had to kind of improvise there on the fly. I am happy. And I think this is an important thing. If you miss a spot, if it gets botched, you should not go directly back into that spot because it takes you out of the moment. Mm-hmm. Just move on. And they did that in this match. In the match, that minute and 15 second match, which, you know, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but it was better because they didn't just try to redo that spot because it always looks bad.
Yeah, that very good point. I you don't really think about that. And I think that if you can do that as well, you're going to let the fans move on as well. They might be less inclined to do a "you fucked up" chant.
Right.
Because if you then go to that spot again, you're admitting that you fucked up,
right,
and giving them that reason. After this, we had the tag teams in the back getting hyped, and they bring in Booker T. Booker T in King Booker character began to read a decree. He was interrupted by Brazongo, the fashion police. They give Booker a ticket, and Booker turns into regular Booker. "Tell me you did not just say that. Can you dig that sucker?" Blah, blah, blah. Nikki Bella takes on Carmella because these two keep on fighting. And Carmella just shrieks and makes sounds in the ring. I don't know why I never noticed this until tonight. And it is really annoying. It takes away from the match.
Finds it a little bit grating.
Yeah, they could have put on a good match. I probably, but I just couldn't pay attention.
You were taken out of it.
Yeah.
I thought this was a pretty good match. I think these two have some good chemistry. I just think they fought way too many times. I think this is another one of those instances where you've seen them interact so often since Nikki has come back that it's lost all meaning. And they're not doing what, and listen, Miz and Dolph have had a lot of matches, but those matches are extremely high quality matches. They're giving us new and different things every time, new and different spots every time. I don't think Carmella is at the point where she can do that. I think she's still learning. I think Nikki, who has improved so much in the ring from just a couple years ago when we were just begging them to take her off TV, but I don't think she's in a position where she's not a Dolph Ziggler, right? She's a good hand that can put on good matches, but not the kind of person who can put on a different match every single time with a green opponent like Carmella is. So we just kind of get a lot of the same, and we don't get an ending to the match. Because we have Charlotte come down, and then the Raw women, huh?
Yeah, Charlotte has a ticket, and she is sitting ringside.
And she's not afraid to show you.
Yes, and Nikki eventually attacks Charlotte, pulls her into the ring, but this leads to the remainder of the Team Raw women coming out and laying a beat down on Nikki. Carmella tries to come in and help to no avail, but then down comes the rest of Team SmackDown, and we get a brawl with them. Even though, you know, Nia, for the most part, did a lot of destruction, she eventually ended up through the timekeeper's area.
And she was just kind of left there. The Raw women I love the fact that the Raw women all came out of the crowd, but they went back up the ramp.
Yeah.
Because that's where they would go. Especially, you know, did they all have tickets? I didn't see anyone waving their tickets as they jumped in. I'm just very confused. But they just left Nia Jax, like, dead on the side of the ring near the timekeeper's area. It's like, all right, well, she'll find her way back eventually.
I mean, Dana Brooke's all like, yeah, leave her there. I'm the alternate. Yeah, I'm part of your team now, guys.
She wants to be in there. I did have a slight problem with Bayley being part of a 5-on-1 beatdown.
Yeah, that is weird.
Bailey's a baby face.
The biggest baby face.
We could probably start calling her a Bailey baby face because that is how, like, a category that should be understood here in 2016.
It's more than white meat baby face.
Right. And having her come in, and yes, Nikki attacks Charlotte, But at the same time, there were four other women beating her down. What are you doing? I thought that was a little, I didn't care for that. And I also didn't care for Nikki hitting just another having these matches with Raw against SmackDown. You have to find a way to have them interact, the ticket and all that stuff, and no animosity, no buildup, no anger, and Nikki just hits Charlotte. This is all just very contrived.
After this, we got, and I know I'm going to have to explain this, but this might be the most logical tag team match that we had of both shows, and it was a 16-person tag match.
But it was the most logical.
We had American Alpha, Breezango, the Hype Bros, and the Usos with Rhino and Slater in their corners taking on the Vaudevillains, the Headbangers, the Spirit Squad, and the Ascension. A lot of those in there.
A lot of those.
And yes, this does seem silly, but we had, for the most part, 4/5 of the team.
They were all
teaming
on the
together.
Same team. Yes, they weren't fighting each other, so that was what made it logical.
And it was what it was. We got a "We want Slater, we want Rhino" chants throughout it, and eventually Gable gets the pin on, I think it was Thrasher after Grand Amplitude, and the team wins going into Survivor Series.
Just so many tag matches we had to see this week. So many tag matches.
The tag ropes are going to be retired and replaced with the brand new, younger tag ropes.
They need a piece of like metal cord at this point.
Yeah. And what do we have now? Oh, Cutting Edge. Edge came out. And with not much time left, about 15 minutes left in the show, Edge comes out and he introduces that the Team Blue, after talking about how he bleeds blue. And we get the SmackDown team, AJ Styles, Shane McMahon, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, and their mascot, James Ellsworth, coming out. And Edge kind of disses AJ Styles, congratulates Ellsworth, tries to understand why Randy Orton is with the Wyatts. And this leads to eventually Undertaker coming out, says that he won't be defined by WrestleMania alone anymore. Survivor Series was where he was born. You guys should not fear failing, but if you do, you'll have hell to pay. Raw will rest in peace. And they barely got that all in because JBL got cut off mid-sentence, trying to say something at the end there.
Going into Shooter, the show that they were so highly hyping on Raw, or I'm sorry, on SmackDown. They're all the same thing, honestly.
They were really hyping it on Raw yesterday,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they were, you're right. Listen, Undertaker coming out here, I was under the impression there were going to be two completely different segments, the Edge segment and the Undertaker segment. They blended them both together. I don't understand how this has anything to do with the other. Interesting to hear Undertaker say, essentially it sounds like he's going to become more of a full-time performer. Maybe not a full-time is the best way to put it, but a more consistent performer. I think that is a little scary. Undertaker's an older gentleman.
We've seen pictures of him using crutches,
right,
and canes in the past couple years.
So I don't know how I feel about that. I'm excited because of the character, and I think there's still some good matches with some of the guys on the card that he can work with and kind of bring them up if they will book it the correct way. And so that's somewhat exciting. But having him be a part of this idea, they're just trying to up the stakes. They want you to go, well, if Undertaker really wants SmackDown to win, then it must be important. But there's still no stakes. There's still nothing at all that you are fighting for except for bragging rights, except for dominance. Who's the more dominant brand? It doesn't mean anything. When Sheamus and Cesaro had their best of seven and they were just fighting to be the more, who's the more dominant guy, we didn't care. When they put a title shot possibly up for grabs if someone won, it became more important. So there's no importance here. but they wanted to give you the Undertaker saying it so you'd believe him.
You know, like, something that we should probably take into consideration as to when you say they're fighting for dominance, that's a thing that's important to Vince McMahon. We might not understand that because we want to see some logical reason for this, but like Vince McMahon is a crazy person and he believes in dominance. Like he wants to rule his industry. Like I've heard stories of him like trying to wrestle people to the ground on planes and, right. and backstage because he wants to be the dominant one. He wants to be on top of them and show that he's the strongest. And that's probably why this is like to show that one is stronger than the other. Well, do they really care? Like they still have their belts. They still have their show, but that to us, that doesn't make sense. But I think to the man who with the plan,
the guy who's running the show,
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense to
yeah.
him. Listen, I understand that. A lot of what passes for humor, I don't find funny. I'm sure he finds hilarious, but it's paper thin. No matter how you slice it, whether or not you think dominance is important or not, the reason is paper thin. It still doesn't matter. It's still, unless something dramatic happens during this pay-per-view with a big debut or a, you know, someone coming back or a big turn, no one will remember this pay-per-view whatsoever because nothing important will have happened.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit more about Survivor Series itself here in just a minute. But before we do that, let's talk about NXT TakeOver Toronto this Saturday on the WWE Network. It feels like it's been a while since an NXT TakeOver, and it has been Brooklyn.
Sure.
Which was in August. So, we've had about 3 months in between, and I guess that makes sense, but I don't know why. It just has felt like forever.
It's pretty normal.
Since we've had one. These shows always deliver, and I think that we have a great card coming up for this one as well. 5 matches announced for the show. Let's kick things off with Bobby Roode taking on Ty Dillinger. Originally a tag team going into the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, and Bobby Roode bailed on Ty when they were taking on Sanity. And this led to, obviously, a breakup, and now these two going at it. Probably two of the most over people the brand right now. This might be a tough one to call.
You know, I feel my instinct would say that Roode goes over cheating in some way, but, man, is Ty Dillinger over. And even over Bobby Roode in one of the more recent episodes of NXT, Ty came down to attack Bobby Roode, and he was just on fire. The crowd, just every beat, they cared so much. And I think they get it now. I think they've, you know, obviously Ty Dillinger started as a delusional heel that was constantly getting beat, and he was calling himself a 10, and he got over because of how outlandish that gimmick was and how over the top it was. And they kind of used him as fodder for other guys, including Almas and some other people. I think they get it now. I think they get that this guy might be a world title contender down the road.
Talk about a grassroots ascension.
Sure.
To the top tier of a promotion. Like Nakamura, Joe, Roode, Aries, all these people came into NXT already pretty well established and already going to have the crowd behind them, where Dillinger was just this lowly tag team guy who was an enhancement talent and eventually found his way, found the gimmick, made it his own, owned it, and the crowd has accepted him open arms, and he is one of their favorites now.
I had my first feeling was that Bobby Roode was probably going to be in the main event picture before long, going up against Nakamura after Nakamura was finally done with Joe. It seemed like a good person to play off Nakamura, very different styles, very different presentation. And I thought that's where they're going with this. And so it would make sense in that case for Roode to go over. But I mean, I'm going to go on a limb. I'm going to go with Ty Dillinger for this. I think that they get this guy special, and I think that they're going to try to put him over and figure out maybe the feud continues, but give him a big win. Give him something that will make him make the in-ring presentation match the rest of it.
In a perfect scenario, I would think that you could give Bobby Roode the win here by cheating, and then at the next takeover, give Dillinger the win, and then you could flip Bobby Roode off to Nakamura at that point in time. But this Joe Nakamura feud is likely over here, and I don't think that you can just give Nakamura a placeholder feud for 3 months before giving in giving Bobby Roode a chance.
So who are you going with?
I think Dillinger wins it.
But think about this. Bobby Roode's character, he is so cocky. He's played things off so well. He can lose to Dillinger and come out in the next episode of NXT and say, I didn't really care about that anyway. I'm going after gold. And it doesn't miss a beat. Doesn't miss a beat,
yeah.
And he'd be fine in that situation. So that's what, yeah. So we're on the same page there.
We have the finals for the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic with the Authors of Pain taking on TM61. And Paul Ellering is suspended above the ring inside of a cage.
I didn't know that part of it.
I didn't either. I just read that on the Wikipedia page.
Really? Okay. Are you sure that someone didn't just put that in there?
Because that very well could have been.
Because that doesn't seem like a thing that they would do in NXT. I know Paul Ellering has gotten involved in matches recently, and that was like actually he hadn't before. So he's making his presence known. We haven't seen a lot of managers in NXT proper, so it would be. Something, I guess.
Legit.
It is legit.
Yeah. On WWE.com.
Okay. Well, I did not realize that. It must be something I missed in the show. Or it was something that they're doing on Wednesday night. That might have been a pre-tape or something. Anyway, I'm excited about this match. I think that TM61 has done a great job recently. Their in-ring work is amazing. I'm really happy they're in the finals because I thought this was a great platform. And Authors of Pain, I'm happy that Ellering has gotten involved. I think their matches have become a little more complex. They have a great dominant vibe to them. This was the right move. I really think these two teams facing off in the finals is the right move. Breaking off Revival, breaking off Ciampa and Gargano was a good move. This was a well-booked tournament.
Yeah.
This was a very well-booked tournament. They did a great job in furthering feuds, starting new ones. I was very impressed with that.
And with all the shit that they were handed with this, like Hideo Itami getting hurt before the tournament started and having to be replaced, Scott Dawson getting hurt and the Revival having to pull out of
Austin
the tournament.
Austin Aries getting hurt.
Exactly.
Middle, having to tape other things to plug and play to get through this whole thing. Yeah, it was amazing.
I really like TM61, but I'm going to say that the Authors of Pain win this.
And I'm going right there with you. These guys are the next big thing. Now, we do have the Revival holding the titles. We could see Authors of Pain, if Ciampa and Gargano win those titles away from them, we could see Authors of Pain fighting them in the near future for the titles. Or we could see a really bad beatdown with TM61 trying to get their revenge and having a longer program with these two guys with more of a feud,
yeah,
really with each other, which what I would probably.
Here's what I see is Paul Ellering having something and passing it down out of the cage to his boys and them using those to cheat to get the win, and yes, keep it going with TM61 for a little bit.
I think it's a good move. I think the body styles and the ring styles will work well in this one because TM61 has to use more skills, better tag wrestling to take down the beasts. So yeah, I think we're on the same page with that one, and I'm excited for this match. And I probably wouldn't have been a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm. And then let's stay on the tag teams. We have the NXT Tag Team Championship on the line in a 2 out of 3 falls match. The Revival taking on DIY, Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa. This likely should be Gargano and Ciampa's last shot at the titles as far as the Revival being champions is concerned. This has been a fun feud between these teams. They've put on some amazing matches. Their match at Brooklyn was intense. Yeah,
textbook, just incredible. So well done.
I think you get Revival in two straight falls here, and you have Ciampa turn heel on Gargano.
Ah, that's a pretty bold statement. You know, normally I would think that Gargano and Ciampa would probably go over here. And I know one of the reasons why you have never been keen on that is that you still don't see them as a tag team because they didn't come in as a tag team. They came in just for the Classic, and that was a year or so ago. But they've been primarily a tag team since they've been in
NXT. Yes, they have been. Yeah, they were a makeshift team to me when they first came in. But, I mean, they've been together now for a year.
Right.
And they've done a good job as a team. But we did get those little teases of Ciampa turning on him, and I think that that might have left some people's minds, and if you do it now, you're going to catch them off guard.
I think it's a really good idea because I think that the feud between those two guys would be tear the house down matches and sets up a really, really nice mid-card feud for NXT. So I really like your idea. And also, the Revival have not been on TV in a while because they've been injured, or Scott Dawson's been injured, and they haven't been a focal point of the show. Taking the titles off of them now seems, but since there has been no focus on them, there's like no momentum built up to finally get those titles off of them. So I'm going to stick with the Revival. I'd go more, you know, to that'll go to a third fall, but I would not be surprised if they pull the trigger with a title change because Gargano and Ciampa are over, and we could definitely be surprised by this one.
Yeah,
but I'm still going to go with the Revival.
Okay. Then we have the NXT Women's Championship with Asuka defending against returning Mickey James. Well, debuting for NXT, Mickey James. But Mickey James has spent the last number of years in TNA, and she is returning to the WWE fold for at least a one-off shot here against Asuka. I think because of that, we know what the result is is going to be. But Mickey James is one of the best women's wrestlers in the last 10 years. And I didn't really see much of her work in TNA, but from what I understand, she can still go. So I imagine a pretty good match here.
Yeah. It'd be foolish to pick, to not pick Asuka in this. We know that she's going to go over here. It's just how is this going to be more of a, the rumors were, and they might have been confirmed, I'm not sure, that they wanted Trish Stratus versus Asuka.
Oh,
but
really?
Trish got pregnant and was not able to do that. So they had to kind of, they didn't have another feud set up. They didn't think anything was logical, so they went with Mickey James. I don't know if that's confirmed or not, but it kind of makes sense because this is not, I don't think this is the wow match that they might have wanted in this situation. Hopefully they'll put on a good match. There'll be some, Mickey James will get in some offense, but Asuka should go over pretty handily in this. And they could use this time on this special to set up the next feud. Maybe get, we've had Billie Kay and Peyton Royce teasing that this is their division now, and they're in a thing with Liv Morgan at this point. I could see that kind of spilling over because they called out Asuka in a recent episode of NXT. So I could possibly see Peyton Royce and Billie Kay coming out and attacking Asuka after the match, and Liv Morgan jumping in to help, and now we have a tag team thing set up for a little while. Mm-hmm. Combine those two feuds and eventually have someone like Billie Kay challenging Asuka. So I mean Asuka going over, and I hope they set something up for the future on this episode or on this pay-per-view.
Yeah. And then the main event, NXT Championship match, Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Samoa Joe. We're all pretty much assuming Nakamura is going to win this. Weirder things have happened, but they've had a very nice feud. Joe having a couple week period where he was feigning a face turn only to reassert himself as a definite heel, attacking Nakamura. they've really built up animosity between these two, and it should be a good, fun, hard hitting blow off match here.
Yeah, I agree. I gotta go with Nakamura. I can't see them taking the title off him. I can't see them having Nakamura pinned. I really can't. I could see something funky, but they don't do that a lot in NXT, and I think it's time for this feud to have run its course. So Nakamura goes over. The only question for me is, where do those guys go afterwards? And we talk about Nakamura possibly with someone like Bobby Roode. We had talked in the past about someone like Austin Aries, possibly. He's injured and might be setting some other things up, other places on the card. And then where does Joe go afterwards? Because there's not a lot of logical places that Joe goes. He's in the world title hunt. I can't see a lot of baby faces right now that are a logical guy for him to wrestle next.
Ty
definitely could be a guy. This is kind of the perfect spot for Joe to go up to the main roster, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And in my perfect scenario, he would be going up to wrestle someone like Brock Lesnar, because those could be some fun matches, some very, very hard-hitting matches. I don't think we're ever going to see that, because we're not going to have Brock Lesnar transferring his momentum onto a guy at Joe's age with Joe's body type at this point in the stage of the game. But, a guy could
win. Vince will just like, oh, it won't draw money.
Yeah, but it could. An MMA-style presentation with those guys could be gangbusters.
Yeah.
But I will say this. This show, NXT has been essentially gutted, and we know this. So many guys have left, have been brought up, and we've left a lot of people to fill in the blanks here. Obviously a lot of talent, but some kind of lost storylines that we're trying to put together. They quietly put together an excellent takeover. They quietly put together five matches that I care about in one way or another. I want to see Asuka be dominant against a returning a superstar. I want to see Joe and Nakamura go at it again. I want to see who wins the Dusty Tournament. It matters to me, and the teams didn't matter. The tag titles is going to be an awesome match, we believe. And Ty and Bobby Roode is an excellent, excellent mid-card match. I mean, if there was a secondary title, it would be these guys going after.
Oh, yeah.
And it would be amazing. So kudos to them for, with a thinner roster, with some people, with some ratings are down in NXT, people are not as hot on the product right now, they've quietly rebuilt, putting things back together, and doing the right thing by good booking.
Yeah. And I think that there is a ton of talent that is not on this card that has been popular recently, like Sanity, like No Way Jose.
Sure. Oh, there's all kinds of other things going on right now down there. You mentioned Sanity. That's a big time. That's a brand new, it's a stable. We haven't seen that since the Wyatts down in NXT. And they're doing something very, very different.
Mm-hmm. So good for them. And now moving on to the Thanksgiving Classic, Survivor Series, 2016. 4 hours in length. Yes, it is. Wow. Is it going to be all of the big four are going to be 4 hours?
4 hours? Absolutely.
Oh, Jesus.
Praise him.
Only six matches are announced for this.
4 hour show.
Yeah. We're through Raw and SmackDown, and there's only six matches announced for it. I'm sure between now and Sunday evening, they'll announce a pre-show match.
Sure, or two.
Yeah. And so let's jump right into it. It's weird. We're going to talk about the title matches first, because they really are considered the undercard
here.
The Brian Kendrick taking on Kalisto, the cruiserweight title on the line. Also, if Kalisto wins the title, the cruiserweight division will transfer over to SmackDown Live. We talked about how we thought that Kendrick is one of the most polarizing characters right now in WWE, taking on Kalisto, who's only been back for 2 weeks, week and a half at this point.
The shame in this is that, once again, on separate shows, so there is no build-up. We've seen Kalisto be aggressive towards Baron Corbin, maybe changing a little more of his style, which would be kind of refreshing. But Kalisto has not. His U.S. title reign was one of the most, anemic title reigns you can imagine in the last several years. And he's done nothing since then.
Which one, the first one or the second one?
Well, both.
Yeah.
So it just has not worked out for Kalisto. He definitely belongs in the cruiserweight division. My gut says they're bringing SmackDown over, or bringing the cruiserweights over to SmackDown. It was a non-starter on Raw. Their special show for themselves airs after SmackDown. I think Vince wants it off his flagship show, quite honestly, which is bizarre to me because they have 3 hours to fill and they have the time and energy to do it. But I would say Kendrick should hold this. Should get, in a normal situation, Kendrick holds this title. And this one, I'm going with Kalisto.
Yeah. You are going with Kalisto.
Yeah. I think they're going to bring the title over to SmackDown.
Okay.
That's the only way that happens.
I'm going to stay with Kendrick. I think that it makes more sense having them on the longer show.
I agree.
And, I don't think they want to push too much cruiserweight stuff on an audience, because like what they'll have at, the SmackDown taping. Well, they'll have the cruiserweight taping followed by SmackDown. And if you're going to have cruiserweights then on SmackDown too, it might be a bit of overkill for a crowd that might not be totally into that.
I hope you're right, because I think your logic is sound, but I just don't know that theirs will be.
Then we have the Intercontinental title match with The Miz defending against Sami Zayn. And again, not only is the title on the line, but if Sami Zayn wins, the title will transfer over to Raw. Miz winning the title on SmackDown was a bit of a surprise. So this leads us into, how does this really go down? You can't really believe that they're going to take the only other secondary title that SmackDown has and take it over to Raw and add another one over there, will you? Or do they think that trading cruiserweight title and Intercontinental title is one in the same, it evens things out?
I can't imagine that they would sign off on that. There's a reason why the U.S. title is on one and the Intercontinental Championship's on the other, because you have a secondary title for people to fight over. If you now have two and none on the other show, it doesn't make a whole lick of sense. I'm going to go with Miz here, but I could see them doing something where Miz cheats to win, Sammy says, I need to fight that guy again, and somehow finagles out of his Raw contract and shows up on SmackDown to get his revenge, and then they continue their program. That would be my guess.
He's
directionless on Raw. They've done nothing with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going with The Miz keeping the title. I think that there's things that you can do with him on SmackDown. Dolph is still technically going to be owed a rematch, so they'll probably go with that. And then maybe they'll use that card to turn him heel after he loses his rematch. We'll see.
Sure.
Then we get into the traditional Survivor Series matches. First, let's start with the 10-on-10 Survivor Series tag elimination match. Team Raw of The New Day, Sheamus and Cesaro, Anderson and Gallows, Enzo and Big Cass, and the Shining Stars taking on Team SmackDown Live, Beauty and the Man Beast, the Hype Bros, American Alpha, the Usos, and Breezango. I mean, with these elimination matches, we can't really predict who are going to be the survivors out of it. I mean, we could try, but I mean, there's so many different options you can have here. So, do you just want to pick which brand wins out of these?
Pass.
Ah, okay. I will take.
I just don't care.
Matches I don't care about for 200, Alex.
I say SmackDown wins, and I say that American Alpha are the ones that stand tall.
Okay.
That's what I think.
All right. I could see... You know what? I could go along with that, because I could see some weird instance where Enzo and Big Cass and Anderson and Gallows just brawl between one another and they all get thrown out of the match.
Sure.
A way for none of them to take a pinfall or a submission.
But you
out
also
of things.
Got both, if that were to happen, you have both tag champs being eliminated as well.
Touche, yeah.
I just have no idea. And since there's no stakes, there's really it's impossible to book. This is one of those ones where you just throw a dart and you guess. And American Alpha are the darlings on SmackDown, whether they're champions or not. I think SmackDown's going to win two of these three matches.
You can't even really build a feud off of these things by having your champion pinned, because you can't have them then get into a feud with someone who pinned them in it.
Exactly.
Like what can happen in the Royal Rumble, sure, and we've talked about before.
Or can normally happen in a Survivor Series match.
Yeah.
Traditionally.
So yeah, that's weird. You know what? I'll go with SmackDown there too.
Okay.
I have a feeling we're going to probably end up agreeing. I kind of like what you said there about SmackDown taking two out of three.
Yeah.
We have the women's 5-on-5 elimination match with Raw team of Charlotte, Bayley, Nia Jax, Alicia Fox, and Sasha Banks, with their alternate Dana Brooke taking on Team SmackDown's Nikki Bella, Becky Lynch, Alexa Bliss, Carmella, and Naomi, with Coach Natalya, who's just been saying lyrics to songs recently. That's her new gimmick. I think that the Raw women are gonna probably stand tall here. And you have arguably three of the four best women on the roster over there.
And one of the most heavily pushed women in Nia Jax.
Yeah.
I can't. The Raw roster is superior. It's got the better stories that were coming into it. I think the Raw women have to take this one.
Yeah. Even though I think that Nia is going to get counted out at some point,
sure,
to be eliminated.
Yeah.
It's the safe elimination.
Yeah.
5-on-5 elimination match between the men of Team Raw, Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, and Seth Rollins, taking on Team SmackDown's AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, and Shane McMahon, with their mascot James Ellsworth. I am just having to read a lot of names.
You are, yeah.
This is...
Well, they got a bunch of people on the card, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about, I said I thought SmackDown would win two of the three. Well, I picked one of each, so I gotta pick SmackDown here. But if I'm using the same logic that we have for the women, the Raw roster's better.
Yeah.
Bray has been booked atrociously. Randy has been almost comical in this feud with Bray, and him as like a subservient child with Bray just doesn't work right now, to me. They have Shane McMahon, who isn't a wrestler. They basically have two big time guys in Dean and AJ. And the other guys got Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins. They got Roman Reigns. They got one of the biggest push monsters in the last 5 years in Braun Strowman, plus Chris Jericho. The talent is heavily favored on the Raw roster, in my opinion, at least in the way they've been presented. If not for pure ability, I think we would be a little bit closer there. But Shane McMahon is not a wrestler, and Shane McMahon's on their team, so they automatically have a handicap. But I think SmackDown pulls it out.
Yeah, it only makes sense to give the lesser show,
the underdog show,
the win here. Plus, I mean, the Undertaker just threatened them. Like, you're going to have the Undertaker come and destroy an entire roster for losing at Survivor Series.
The Undertaker thing, you also have the fact that the only real heel out of the four authority figures is Stephanie. So Stephanie gets to do something on Raw and scream at people for 3 hours after they lose. I know how much they love that. I don't particularly like that, but the writers seem to. Somebody at WWE likes to see Stephanie emasculate every single person on the roster. So that's what we'll see.
And then I think we'll have a Lex Luger-style celebration afterwards.
I've won nothing.
And then what we're assuming is going to be the main event, which would be weird if they did that all before the main event, but I still laugh. Brock Lesnar taking on Goldberg.
This has got to be one of the most bizarre matches from our standpoint, trying to pick a winner. Because, I mean, what are your feelings on this? Because mine are pretty strong.
Brock has to win.
Right?
He has to win. You can't, with all they have done to protect Brock in the past 2 years, to unwind all of that with a loss to a guy who hasn't even stepped in a ring before a few weeks ago in 12 years, hasn't wrestled a match in 12 years, a guy who doesn't really care that much about the industry, and is really only coming back for a payday. Like, I'm not trying to say that Brock cares so much about this industry. I mean, Brock cares about Brock and Brock cares about money, but Brock has been protected and pushed as a big deal, and you can't have him lose to this older guy who hasn't been in the ring in that long.
I agree completely, 100%, but I don't know if they do. I don't know if they think that Brock is just such a beast that he can lose this and he'll be fine. I don't know where their heads are at with this. The way they're booking this whole thing with Goldberg being the conquering babyface, it seems like they're setting him up to win. That's what everything, the momentum feels like. But I gotta pick Brock because I gotta think that sanity reigns supreme, and that eventually when the person that beats Brock pins Brock will be somebody that is a star that's on the show that will benefit from it, not a guy who's gonna go home.
Brock's the new Undertaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He beat the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Part of that was transferring that to somebody else. And maybe that's overrated these days. I don't know. But I have to believe it means something. And a guy is going to beat him and be made a bigger star. Goldberg does not need to be made a bigger star. So got to pick Brock.
Yeah. I'm sticking with Brock 100% on that one. All right, so that's Survivor Series. There will be matches for stuff and things. Maybe there's some backstage stakes that, like, actual stakes that the winners get.
like a T-bone or something?
Yeah.
Just food.
And there's one guy's going to be like, oh, I'm vegetarian. Well, actually,
I think what it is the winner of the main event, they all get $25 Sunoco gas cards.
Oh, that's nice.
That's what
of them.
I think it is. Or BP, you know, whatever you like to roll yeah. with.
Maybe they'll just make it one of those, like, Visa gift cards so they can use it anywhere.
Maybe whoever wins doesn't have to ride in a car with either Byron Saxton or David Otunga. Ever again.
Oh, and the losing team has to ride with them for the next month.
There you go.
And film a whole lot of those, whatever that show
ride
is.
Along.
Ride-alongs. All right. So those are our predictions for Survivor Series and NXT TakeOver Toronto. We're actually doing pretty well on time. We have a top five for you this week. And it's one that we've been meaning to do for quite a while.
It's a perfect time, though.
Yeah. And this is our top five problems with the brand extension. The brand extension's been going on for 3-ish months at this point in time. And there hasn't been great things that have been going on. We're also going to, at some point, maybe next week, do top five things that we like about the brand extension to show that we're not completely negative all the time.
Not completely.
But we might as well start with our cynicism.
Well, because this pay-per-view has been so poor, it kind of highlights the problems with the brand extension. If you don't mind, Mike, I'll just kind of jump in here and go first. The first thing for me is just too much crossover too soon. We had the moment after the brand extension, we had a match announced between Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton. So we had guys invading each other's shows within weeks of the rosters being split. And it takes away from the entire idea of the brand split, which means that eventually, after a long time, it becomes special when guys were going to face off. So they started off poorly there, and then they've just continued with it. We've had too much talk about Raw versus SmackDown. We have a whole pay-per-view now booked a couple months later, Raw versus SmackDown. We didn't need this now. I don't even know if we needed it next year. If you really want to be successful, play the long game, not the short game. Give us 2 years of being separate rosters, building different style of shows, giving us a slightly different presentation, and then let these guys maybe go at it when it actually means something. But too much too soon, it's not special. It's not special to see these guys standing in the ring against each other, because all these guys were fighting each other 3 months ago.
Yeah. I'm going to start things off with what we were just talking about, Survivor Series. A pay-per-view that I really looked forward to as a kid. It changed things up a bit, but like we said before, it can continue feuds, it can create new feuds, all in the midst of one of these matches. But because we have created SmackDown versus Raw for a lot of these matches, pretty much all of them with the exception of the Goldberg and Lesnar match, it's just, it's bragging rights all over again with nothing really to gain from this. As we were saying before, I'm kind of repeating stuff at this point, so I won't go too much into details, but I think that they turned one of the best pay-per-views of the year into this kind of just by having the brand extension be a focal point of it.
Sure. I'm going to go with the fact that we haven't made these shows different enough. We have some different camera angles on SmackDown, and they have different graphics when the guys walk to the ring. Mauro definitely gives a different feel to SmackDown than Cole gives to Raw, and those are all very good things. But the presentation is all WWE. It's produced like a WWE show. It's cut like a WWE show. The packages are like that of a WWE show. And the storylines could be interchangeable at any time with what's going on when Raw and SmackDown could be interchanged. Compare that to something like NXT, which is booked like a completely different kind of show. It has a different kind of authority figure that doesn't show up every single week. It's presented in a very straightforward, simple storylines, easy to digest, week to week, episodic. NXT is a different kind of show, and if SmackDown or Raw were to take that as a template or a different kind of template, look at something that they're doing in Lucha Underground and doing these very cinematic almost and TV show style presentation. No, do I necessarily want to see that in SmackDown? No, but look for other options, other ways to present this show that we haven't seen before. And the fact that these shows are so similar, it doesn't make them seem special. It doesn't make them seem unique. I might as well be watching one or the other. And I think that hurts when you're trying to make these things look different and sound different.
I think one step towards that would be having, and I know that this would cost a lot of money, but having two completely different crews that ran these shows, not just from the people who put the rings together, but also your camera people, your backstage hands, your producers in the truck. Like, let's not have Kevin Dunn doing SmackDown production.
Or just let somebody else take a bigger hand in it and still let Kevin Dunn, because they're going to have to use the same people, but let someone else lead in different areas and put together different ideas. Because if you're Shane and Daniel Bryan went on TV, kayfabe, right, in storyline and said, this is going to be a different kind of show, we're going to present it differently, and they have not. It just is not.
Mm-hmm. Next for me is David Otunga. If it weren't for the brand extension, we wouldn't have him on commentary. He is, to call him awful is probably a compliment. He is robotic in his delivery. He makes little sense at times, doesn't seem like he really cares or understands the product. And this is coming from a guy who has been in this company for years, like probably close to a decade at this point in time. And yet he is there to be fodder for JBL, who in his own right doesn't need to be behind a commentary table at this point in time. But he makes watching the show hard at times. And this is a show that has Mauro Ranallo as the lead. And I I need him to be gone.
It continues to sound exactly like a WWE program because it's announced exactly like it. It's a three-man booth, and they do the same kind of plugging, the same kind of show beats are hit. And it's another example of what I was just saying, but getting more specific about Otunga, and I kind of agree there with you. The next thing I would go with is just too much goddamn wrestling. We're fans. We're in our mid-30s. We've been watching wrestling since we were little kids. We're spending a lot of money to go to WrestleMania. We support the NXT shows when they come around our area. We buy merchandise. We subscribe to the network. We have lives outside of that. The reason why we have enough disposable income to go to WrestleMania is that we have jobs and we have people like, you know, wives, girlfriends, friends, other things to do with our life other than watch hours and hours of wrestling every single week. Putting on a show like SmackDown now that is separate storylines makes you have to watch 5 hours a week if you want to stay up with your favorite stars. Throw in NXT, throw in pay-per-views now, sometimes two a month, and also throw in things like the Cruiserweight Classic, this 205 Live that they want to do. Who has enough time to watch all this? Who has enough time to keep up on this? And when I kind of dropped out of watching wrestling for a few years in about 2005 or so, because I literally didn't have enough time to watch even Raw every single week because I was working crazy hours, 80 some hours a week. It just wasn't feasible for me. I didn't have a DVR. I stopped watching because if I felt like I missed weeks, I was out of the loop. I didn't want to go back into it. You're going to have burnout with people, and we haven't seen a huge, the ratings have continued to drop. We haven't seen a big cliff fall over yet, but it's a definite possibility. There's only so much of this product you can consume. There's no other product that asks you to watch this much of it this often, this many nights.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's too much.
Yeah, that's to say the least. And then we have to record an hour and a half podcast at some point during the week too. Next for me is these kind of filler stars. We have people who've been on the roster for a while, like your Jack Swaggers, your Big Show, Kane, those type of guys, Mark Henry, Golden Truth, that are just filling roles there, and because they had so many people, they felt the need they had to break things up in order for everyone to get this time on television. But then they bring in Curt Hawkins and Jinder Mahal, and albeit Rhino's worked out rather well. I mean, he's holding a title right now. But I mean, they were going to bring in Shelton Benjamin before he got hurt.
But how much have they featured Rhino and Slater in the last month?
Really not
much. Not at all?
Yeah. You're filling up your rosters with all these people, and you really don't even have enough time for them to be on your shows consistently. It's mind-boggling why you would break things up and still not have enough time for your guys to be on the show, and you're bringing in more people.
Well, mine kind of ties in there is the plenty of talent, not enough stars. There are so many good and talented people on the roster, all up and down in NXT, up to the main roster. So many guys that have that upper mid-card, main event pedigree you'd see by looking at the way they look, their character. Plenty of guys for those spaces, but no stars. They have not created a single star, really, in the past several years. Roman Reigns doesn't count. He's too polarizing. Half the crowd can't stand him. I don't believe that they've created a star in Roman Reigns. They haven't done it with Seth Rollins. Rollins had all the momentum in the world as a heel. He was doing some good stuff, even though he was had his knees cut out from underneath him by the Authority on a regular basis. They bring him back. They make the mistake of keeping him heel. Don't give him that springboard to the next step. And he seems flat. Their heels are all booked as toothless. Everybody is not as good as John Cena or Roman Reigns. And because they've booked things this long, this way for this long, they've created zero stars to lead these two shows. We love AJ Styles, but AJ Styles has not, he does not have that pedigree right now of being that kind of star that they should have built him up to be. And they could have. They had the chance.
The fans were in it.
And they just haven't booked it that way. And they haven't booked their young guys, and they haven't booked guys like Cesaro or Sami Zayn. They haven't booked Kevin Owens all that well. They haven't created the stars. If you're going to split your roster up, you need guys like Austin and Mankind and Mick Foley and The Rock. Those are four surefire Hall of Famers. Yes.
You said the same person twice.
Who did I say?
You said Mick Foley and Mankind.
Oh, did I say Mankind? All right. I meant it was The Rock, Austin, Triple H, Mankind. Those are the guys I was looking for there. And then you also had guys like Big Show, plenty of other guys there. But those four first guys, those are surefire first ballot Hall of Famers, right? The odds of having those guys always on the roster at any time, that's a special time in the history of the product. But you need that kind of star power to run these two shows and make them both feel special. We don't have that because they haven't made them.
Yeah. And I'm kind of piggybacking off of my last one, and it's a bit off of yours as well, is we now have these guys floundering, treading water, like Sami Zayn, Rusev, Baron Corbin, who have great potential, great upside, have shown... at least in Sammy and Rusev's case, a connection with the crowd. And there's many weeks where they are on and off the show. And we're just left wondering what's going on with them. Sammy has even said on the show that he's just treading water right now. That's a sad thing to be saying on television and admitting. And as I said earlier, he is being thrown into this Intercontinental title match with 2 weeks' notice, really. And there's not enough time to really build this up. And if he loses to Miz at Survivor Series, I just am anticipating this going back to this all over again. And this is because there's too many people on their rosters, and not enough time for all of them, despite Raw being 3 hours, SmackDown being 2 for those guys over there. It's a shame seeing talent being wasted with no direction.
Number 5, my last one, is my biggest pet peeve, and I've driven this into the ground, so please forgive me. Pushing the idea that Raw and SmackDown are in competition is idiotic, asinine, stupid, dumb, ridiculous. It's just embarrassing. They are both the WWE. They make money for the WWE. Both of them want the other to succeed. They do not compete with each other for ratings. They're on different nights. Promos run for each one of those shows during the other shows. There is absolutely no competition, never will be, never has been. There is no possibility of it ever being competition. They are owned by the same people. John Cena once said, I guess in an interview, well, the AFC and NFC are in competition. No, they are not. No, they are not.
The only time that they are is in the Pro Bowl when no one gives a shit because there's nothing at stake.
Right.
And the Super Bowl when it's just two teams and they're playing for a title.
For the title. The Major League Baseball, American League, and the National League are in competition. No, they are not. There is nobody at the Braves front office that is saying, man, we got to beat the Yankees in the ratings this week, because they're not competing for the same people, time, place. They're on different networks, different game times. No, they are not. They have never been. Major League Baseball runs both those organizations. They want them both to succeed. This is not a thing. It can't be a thing. And in presenting it that way, who's ever buying into this, good for you for suspending your disbelief to a point that anything is possible. But I can't, and they need to stop pushing it that way. Ignore the other show just put on your product, make it different, book it well, and make stars. That's the way you're going to succeed, not by pretending that they're in competition.
And going kind of along with that is the fact that we now have two tag team champions, two women's champions, and two fucking world champions. WWE want you to believe, once again, like Kevin said, that these are two separate, not just shows, but promotions, which we know that they are not. But in essence, they have taken a undisputed championship and made it disputed.
Sure.
And are okay with that. This isn't like an interim title like you see in boxing or MMA where a champion is hurt. They bring in an interim champion to fill in until that champion comes back. And then they have a unification match and make it undisputed. No. You have disputed your titles. Now you have no one who can truly say that they are at the top of the game by holding the title. No, because there's always going to be another guy holding a equal title on the other show. It's ridiculous. You don't see any other promotion do that. You don't see any other real sport do that. We don't have two World Series champions every year. We don't have two NBA champions every year. It's ridiculous. And the problem that I see as my biggest with the brand extension.
The fact that you have those two titles and the fact that the brand extension happened those years back is one of the reasons why they didn't create enough stars, is because no one could ever lay claim to being the world champion. Punk couldn't really do it. Del Rio couldn't do it. Ziggler couldn't do it. These guys that were winning these titles could not say they were the world champion because they weren't. They were one of two world champions mm-hmm. in the same company. And that's part of the reason why we're at the place we are. They went back to it and they have just blown back any progress they might have made over the last couple of years.
Yeah. So those are our top five problems with the brand extension. Let us know what you think about them. Is there something that we missed out? Or do you think that some of these things are actually good for it? The brands doubt it, but you're entitled to your opinion. Next week, I think we should do next week just to be positive and give a different side to it. The top five best things about the brand extension.
Sure, there's some good things.
But in the meantime, anything you want to add before we sign off here? We covered a lot in this time, and we got a lot ahead of us with shows on Saturday and Sunday. We will be live tweeting along to things on our Twitter account during NXT and Survivor Series, so make sure you follow us at Miss Spots. Check out our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com or MissSpots.com. You can like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/MissSpots. You can subscribe to this podcast in one of many different wonderful ways. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music. You can subscribe to us, get the episodes automatically delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday morning. And you can also listen to us on Geek Life Radio every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central at geekliferadio.com. For Kevin, my name is Mike. Good night and good wrestling.